Side Hustle Show 131, building an app empire from zero to 70K a month.
Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, where aspiring part-time entrepreneurs learn how to turn their side hustle dreams into reality. Because your 9-to-5 may make you a living, but your 5-to-9 makes you alive. And now, your host, Nick Loper.
Hey, hey, Nick Loper here. What's happening? Welcome to the Side Hustle Show. You can tell your boss it's already rich enough. This is episode 131, building an app empire from zero to 70K a month. My guest did just that with his smartphone app business. At one point, he and his team created a ridiculous 1,500 apps in a 24-month time frame. Hey, when you see an opportunity in the market, I guess you go full bore at it. I am excited to introduce Carter Thomas from BlueCloudSolutions.com. It's a blog and training ground for everything related to the app business. Now, I've compiled all the notes and highlights from this call into a free PDF document you can download at SideHustleNation.com/131 or through the link in the episode description of your podcast player app. This whole app world is fascinating to me because it's almost like little micro software products, little micro websites that can serve ads. And on this call, we get into some of Carter's strategies for building apps quickly, cheaply, and with less risk than we've heard in the past, how apps make money, including free and premium apps, and the unique way that he'd take advantage of the app marketplaces today if he had to start all over from scratch. But I started out by asking him how he comes up with ideas for new apps. Let's roll.
Think of apps more like products as opposed to this kind of amorphous business model that has its own mind. And apps, the way apps are researched and people come up with ideas, is just like how you would do it with a website or with a product or a business or of any kind. So when you come up with an idea, it's, you know, the classic example of someone who has a business idea, like, you know, then someone who knows business walks in and says, well, actually, you know, maybe you should find some market demand and see the competition and all that sort of stuff. So it's the same process as that.
So you're doing like with niche sites from the days of old, like keyword research and long tail pro and that kind of thing, or just seeing what else is out there, how they're selling?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So one of the best kind of, realizations I've ever had about market research, I think Ryan Dice told me this, was, you know, the difference between topics and marketplaces. And I think that's one of the big things that people in the app store are having a hard time transitioning to, or at least, you know, in our community, people that have been building apps for a couple of years, is that they've always been like, oh, well, what category should I go in? Because what category has the most traffic or the highest advertising bids? And for a long time, that was how you decided what to get into, right? For example, with Casino, the advertisers were spending so much money, and they still do, that if you just put all your apps in Casino, you're going to make all this money.
Regardless of if it was a casino app?
Yeah, correct. Like if you put a slot machine game in the store versus if you spent your time building an arcade game, the slot machine game was probably going to make you more money because that category is just hotter, you know?
Okay, interesting.
Now, what's changed about that is, you know, as competition gets bigger and as the marketplace evolves, this happens in every business, you have to start saying like, all right, well, who are the users downloading this app? Instead of it just being the, you know, the wonders of the app store, who's going to get me the downloads and make me the money and all this sort of thing, I need to think about these actual people. You know, who's out there that's going to want this type of slot machine?
Okay.
And so when you start thinking about that, you actually think about the marketplace in terms of, all right, well, what people can I build this app for, instead of saying, what topic do I want to build this app around? You know, I don't want to just build a casino app. I want to identify what kind of people do I want to build a casino app for? And when you start to make that shift about the market research, everything you mentioned about the keyword research, and for us, it's called ASO, which is App Store Optimization. Keyword research is our version of SEO, and that's kind of the wheelhouse, but it's all the same stuff, right? Just a little bit more of a gray science because we don't have as much insight that Google gives us on the web. But that's pretty much where it comes down to. You find an audience or a demographic of people that has a demand, and you say, I'm going to build it for this marketplace. I'm going to cater to their problem, and I'm going to solve it. And you go from there. And I think that's one thing that a lot of people are still not wrapping their head around because they're used to saying, well, I'm just going to put it in the app store and the app store is going to take care of me. You know, it doesn't really work like that anymore.
Right. So two general categories or genres, right? Like the problem solving apps or the very like useful, helpful, like the Evernotes kind of the world. And then the entertainment apps, like the games, the casinos, the slot machines, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Do you find that one performs better than the other, or do you focus on one category versus the other?
Pros and cons for both. What I would say is for the entertainment style categories are definitely more competitive. They're harder, but they, you know, it's just a bigger playing field. It's a bigger sandbox. You can get bigger traffic. You know, if you get a if you get something that hits, you're multiplying that by 10x okay. the problem solution stuff. Now to get that is a lot harder. But, you know, with games and entertainment, it just comes down to like what makes it unique, what makes it cool, what makes it innovative. It's all about what's pushing the envelope of the development cycle, right? So it's all about the hot new thing. It's what's cool, all that sort of thing.
Mm. Now with like, with Kindle, like fiction always outsells nonfiction, but it's easier to sell nonfiction.
Exactly. Yeah. Perfect example. Right. With problem solution, as you can imagine, it's a much more targeted niche. It's a smaller, you know, you're focusing on a much smaller subsection of people, but you're going to have a much higher conversion rate. And typically, they're going to keep your app for a long time if it continues to solve their problem in a way that other apps can't. And you can see the data a lot more, and it's a little bit more black and white, right? Like, all right, here's the problem in our app, or here's what people want. Here's how we can solve it. Let's look at the data that's going to drive our strategy. It's a pretty clear path in that sense versus games or, you know, you build a keyboard app. I mean, it's hard. It's really hard to gauge what everyone wants as opposed to being like, all right, I think this is a great idea. Let's make this happen and see if it goes to the top of the charts.
One app that I always wanted to build was like a paper football app where you kind of like flick the little thing. This is what we used to play like during homeroom and nonsense. Like, and there's probably a dozen that are already out there. So if I wanted to build this app and wanted to like test market demand for such a thing, what would be my first step?
So your first step, and this is because this is, you know, where we are in the app market. This is different than what I would have said a couple of years ago, but this is a good thing, is that I would go in the app store and I would spend a day, maybe you've already done this, and find 10 apps that are as similar as you can get to what you want. Now, they might not look like, you know, paper football apps, but maybe they're shuffleboard apps, right, with the same sort of movement that you could imagine it being a paper football. Or maybe it's a regular football app that you could kind of reimagine in that way. But just going through the app store and finding 10 to 15 examples that's close enough, right? And this is just a terrific exercise to do. Once you find those 10 examples, you go through, you read the reviews, you see how it works. You can go on something like Apptopia and use their analytics to see what the, you know, historic trends is, like the SEM rush for the App Store, you know, what their download volume is, all that sort of thing.
Okay, I was wondering if you had any data other than just like what they're ranking currently. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And you kind of do that, right? So you just go out and you say, all right, who's done this before? That's the first step. The second step is you decide, all right, is this a business model, right? You know, is there a reason why there's only 9 people in the store under this keyword that have built a paper, you know, a football app? And is that okay with you?
Would that be good or bad?
Yeah, exactly. It's like you just kind of determine. And what I always do, like a lot of developers, and even marketers to a certain extent, for some reason, they just don't reach out to these developers. And one of the things that I think has helped our business and, you know, my own stuff be really successful is that I am constantly emailing developers, just asking them to share their information. And I share all of my stuff with them first, so like, you know, in goodwill.
Okay.
But just emailing. So let's say you find those 10 apps, you email the 10 people and say, hey, look, I'm building this app. I looked through yours. Here are 5 suggestions I think you could make. Here's how you could do it. I read through reviews. Here are some common themes. You know, this would be a great update. Hey, how's this app been for you? What's your story been like? And all of a sudden, you're going to get a bunch of people writing back to you and saying, oh, well, here's everything that's going on. And they just kind of show you the business model. The third step is you take that a step further. And then you approach them and you say, okay, well, you find out what they're having a problem with. Typically, it's like, I'm either not getting enough downloads or I'm not making enough money. And you say, all right, well, I will license this source code from you. Like, I will purchase a copy of what you've already built for, let's say, $500 or $1,000, like, you know, pennies on the dollar versus what you'd expect to pay. And they can keep everything they're doing. Like, it's nothing for them. And you say, I just want the code so that I can start from, you know, hit the ground running. I don't want to have to go from 0 to 1 since you've already built all this.
Oh, interesting. So finding that similar shuffleboard app, I'm going to be able to, you know, use this as my foundation versus building completely from scratch. Hey, $500, $1,000 is gravy to them. They're going to keep selling their app or keep it live in the app store. So they're, unless they're like very, very scared of competition, they would say, okay, that sounds like a deal.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. You know, and it really is a numbers game, because in the grand scheme of things, I would expect maybe 10% of everyone I reach out to at the end of the funnel would say, okay, yeah, I'm willing to sell you this for a blank price. And some of them might be like 50 grand and you're like, okay, take it easy. But, you know, going through that process, that might take you what, like a week to do? And think about how much money and how much time and how much risk you're saving by doing this process, as opposed to saying like, okay, I'm gonna start from scratch. I'm gonna think through every single scenario of if they click the menu, what do they see in the menu? How do they get back from the menu? And walking through developer, like, it's just it's unrealistic to do that. Especially, you know, to your original question being like, how do you gauge market demand? This is a great way to do that even before you get the source code. So it's, you get all this information, you get all this market research directly from the developers. And then you can make a very, very calculated decision on whether you want to move forward.
And they'll be fairly, oftentimes you find they're fairly open with how much, you know, how many downloads they're getting, kind of what their revenue generation model is, stuff like that.
I wouldn't say they're always open to it. I do think that there is a very big difference when you walk in to help them and to volunteer your own information. And if you don't have an app, you know, you can find new ways to help them out. But if you come in being like, I just want to help you out, I'm genuinely interested in what you're doing, you know, that's just kind of the nature of people, is that they're much more willing to help you, like, you know, share information with you too. Versus if you go out and be like, hey, I'm really interested in building an app just like yours, can you share all your market data? That's probably not going to work out too well for you.
Probably not so much. Is this how you find that most people get started, or how you've built this incredible library of apps in such a short time, is like kind of seeing what else is out there and saying, okay, I can build something similar to that, or I can build something better than that, or I can, you know, make my own little tweaks to that, versus like coming, just picking ideas out of the sky.
Yeah. So this strategy is really good when you have someone who, like you said, hey, I want to build an app like this. Like, they have an idea, or they have something in their mind that they really want to make a realization, and they just want to find out how to crystallize that idea into a real app. Okay. This strategy works perfectly. Now, the other side of the coin is you get another section of people that say, hey, look, I just want to get in the app business. What do I do? How do I get started? I don't care if it's a paper football app or a makeup app, or, you know, a SAT prep app, like whatever. I just want to get in the game. You know, how do I get started?
Right. This is a big marketplace. I want to take advantage. I want to have a buy button on this marketplace.
Exactly. And for those people, I say, okay, you should go to a marketplace that sells templates already. And so there's plenty of them out there. You know, there's Chupa Mobile, there's Fliptopia, there's Game Gorillas. I mean, you can Google like iPhone app source code or app templates. And you'll see, you know, thousands of these templates out there. And so for those people, I say, go find a template that's inexpensive, that's going to be a great place to start, that has good documentation. Spend your time, you know, connecting with other people and just learn from this. You know, make it a month-long project where you're just going to learn all this stuff and see if you can get it in the store for less than $500 all in.
Okay. So that's realistic to find some template for sale and whatever your app. Isn't it like $100 fee to join the store or something?
Correct. Yeah. So for Apple, it's $100 a year. For Google Play, it's $25 a year. Okay. And Amazon, I believe they still have it waived. So I think that's free.
Okay.
So yeah, after you have that cost, you know, you can get a template from anywhere from, you know, open source template, all, you know, to like $5,000. But, you know, plenty of them are under $100. I mean, I would say a majority of source codes out there are under $100.
Wow. Okay.
And so that's great just for a beginner, right? Like, you know, you just want to get a basic game or a really simple problem solution app that you can just learn from. You might hire a designer, or you can, you know, if you have any design skills at all, you can spend a couple hours in Photoshop and repurpose the design, make your own, you know, hire someone on Fiverr to make an icon for you, create some screenshots, and you could easily be up in the store in a matter of weeks for, you know, a couple $100. Now, is that going to create passive income that you can, you know, retire from? No, but it's
I thought we were really on to something there.
Yeah, if it was, we probably wouldn't be. I would be in Tahiti right now.
But no, this is a really compelling way to go about, because the only people I've talked to before are like, hey, I hired a developer on Elance. It was $2,500, and that's a much more intimidating upfront investment with no validation, really, with just kind of saying, I'm putting this out on spec, and if it works, it works. If not, this is kind of an experiment for me.
Yeah, and it's going to be like a $5,000 experiment, 3 months of their time, right?
Yeah.
which is just, and you know, a good reference point here is I saw an amazing graph the other day, and it showed the growth of the internet over the last 20 years. And it started in, like, you know, let's say 94, and then it ended in 2012. And from 94 to 2000, it went up maybe like 10%, right? It was this very, very small curve. And then from the year of 2000 to 2012, you can imagine, you know, it's like a massive exponential curve. And so now we're even higher than that. Well, people in 2000 were like, oh, we're in this huge internet bubble. This is like as big as it's ever going to be. And that's 1/50th of what it is now.
Right.
And so what I think a lot of people don't realize is that we are still in that very, very early stage of mobile and in apps. And we're in like what you'd expect to, when in 1997, when someone said, oh, I want to build a website, what do I do? You have all these people that say, well, you got to go hire a firm for 50 grand to build a website. Or, you know, 1999, 2001, you go, all right, go to ThemeForest. Like, you're crazy to build this from scratch. Or, you know, go get a builder to do this for a template. And we're kind of, that's the direction we're moving in the app business as well. And so that's why these conversations need to start happening so that way more people have access to the App Store.
What do you think of some of like the drag and drop, you know, app builder programs that are out there? I'm not, I'm blanking on coming up with any of their names off the top of my head, but I'll look them up and link to in the show notes, where it's like, okay, this, you can use kind of our pre templates and move things around and kind of use that to build it out without hiring a developer or buying the source code.
Yeah. I'm not here to judge anyone's business model, but I personally don't love the builders, right? So you got things like AppyPi and Como and App Builder and App Maker and all these, you know, the kind of, like you said, who those are good for. Let's say you have your mom and pop shop and you own a gardening company in, you know, some suburb somewhere, and you say, I just want to spend $50 and get an app. I'm going to get my intern to do this, and it's going to be really easy. Mm-hmm. That's not a bad idea, because, you know, you're going to get your map in this. It's just going to like pull in your social media, your location, your hours, put a few photos, and you're done.
Very basic stuff.
Yeah. The problem is it's not very flexible at all. You don't get access to any of the code. It's kind of a static thing. And then you've got to pay this monthly membership that just kind of pigeonholes you, right? So that's what that is. I do think that there's something to be said for, like, my buddy Trey, Trey Smith, he's a great guy in the app space, super smart. He built an amazing game builder called BuildBox. And a lot of people have a lot of success with that. And that's just kind of the next level. Like, it's a physical, like, piece of software that does all that. The thing about that, though, is you got to know what you're doing. I mean, it's not a drag and drop, like, easy, you know, anyone can do it. But it is a piece of software that builds apps without knowing how to code. So I think it's just one of those things where we're getting to a point now where templates are so commodified that it doesn't really make sense to put yourself into a box where you can't update or change the functionality. You might as well start with something you have total control over so you can turn it into what you really want.
Okay. And now from this open source code or from this, you know, licensed code, are you turning around and then finding your Elance Odesk person to, you know, customize it to your needs, or are you trying to do that on your own? It sounds kind of technical.
Yeah. If you want to customize it, which you definitely should, you want to hire someone for sure. You go to Elance, and on Blue Cloud, if you go to Blue Cloud, we have tons of eBooks about, you know, how to hire a developer and, you know, scripts you can use in Elance and all that. So what you do is you buy the template, make sure you got everything you need. You spec out what changes you want. And then you say, all right, I'm going to go to developer and I'm going to hire them to do these specific tasks. And here's the price it should cost.
Okay.
And you do that. And then part of that job will be, they also can, you know, it's called publishing the app, which means get it from a computer into the App Store, like upload it and do all the Apple technical signing and all that. Mm-hmm. So that can be really helpful. Some people like to learn to do that themselves. But, you know, the key word is customizing it. That's definitely a technical job versus someone who wants just a core foundation to learn from. That's something you can kind of mess around with on your own.
Okay. Yeah, that's what's so it's what makes an interesting market, because I feel like, oh, man, I really wish I got into this in 2012. And all the people who got in 2012 are like, I really wish I got into this in 2009. Right. And so all the people in 2020 are going to be like, hey, 2015, you know, there's still, like you said, the early days of this.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like, it's so easy, especially for me. But I would imagine for a lot of people listening to this, you know, in the entrepreneur world, in the internet marketing space, they get what's going on. They're smart. They understand marketing, and they see the parallels between this and the internet. And they're kind of like, oh man, you know, how do I get in? You know, the app store is so crowded. You know, blah blah blah. And what they don't realize is that, like, the sheer amount of money and opportunity that's outside of the app store. And this is where the real opportunity is. For example, guys who are getting, you know, a couple million visitors to a very, very targeted niche website, and they say to me, oh, hey, I'd love to have a game. How much is it going to cost? I'm ready to spend 50 to 100 grand for like a basic Fruit Ninja game. Mm-hmm. And I say, why don't you go build a template, redesign it for your audience, and that's going to cost you $3,000 and it'll be done in 2 weeks. And they're like, wait, what? And so from a pure arbitrage standpoint, right, like you can imagine how many huge opportunities there are. Big companies, whether it be on the internet, whether it be brands, whether it be celebrities, whether it be anyone, is sitting around saying, we got all this traffic. We know mobile is where it's the future. How do we get into mobile? And imagine someone walking in the door and saying, hey, look, I've got this app. And you can run all your traffic into it. It's going to be exactly the kind of people, you know, game or problem solution that you're looking for. And I can sell this to you for $50,000. And if you build this from scratch, it's going to be $300,000. Meanwhile, you went and bought it for $4,000 on Fliptopia because, like, in the app store, that's how much it's worth. But in the grand marketplace of the entire business world, it's worth $100,000, right? Because you're making a deal with someone who has something that's completely outside of the app store. And so to your point, why 2015 is going to be like the 2020 people are going to look at 2015 and say, oh, I wish I got in. They're going to look back and be like, man, why didn't I get that NBA star to, you know, sponsor my app that I bought on this template? I bought this basketball template. Why didn't I go to these basketball players and get them to give me $50,000 to do that? Because those opportunities are huge, because that's where all the money is. And you can imagine the competition on that level is like, it's gone, right? There is no competition. Like, nobody's doing this stuff.
Well, this is, you know, getting the light bulb turning off or turning on for another, you know, we're talking about, you know, app development and being the developer and selling them yourself. But there's another opportunity there. And like you said, going out and selling it to that brand, to that company that already has the traffic, the eyeballs, but they're not in the app store and they have convinced themselves that this is, you know, $50,000, $100,000 opportunity. Now, knowing what you know, you can go build that for $4,000 or $5,000 or less. And so just like John Logar did a few weeks ago on the show, talking about pre-selling the software, finding that pain and saying, hey, let me figure out how to solve this for you and making the margin in between.
That's exactly it. I mean, that is such a home run business model, right? And I mean, that's what web development firms were built on. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a blog post about this a couple of months ago. It's called Reskinning for Enterprise. And anyone who goes to Blue Cloud Solutions, you can search and find this blog post. And I lay this whole out, all this model out. And like you said, with everything you just mentioned, there's so many different pieces of that where you could profit, right? Like, you could just be a development firm where you just broker the deals and you have a couple templates and then you get money on the backside for a monthly membership fee. You could just be the person who puts the deals together, right? Like, if you know a lot of people, you can just team up with a bunch of developers and say, hey, look, I'm going to send you these crazy leads. Just give me $5,000 per lead I give you, you know, stuff like that. There's just so many different ways. And so in the app store, there's still people making tons of money. It's still very viable to create, you know, profitable apps, you know, fun hobbies, get started, make side incomes, have passive cash flow to come in. It's absolutely feasible. And it's a good business to be in. But when we're talking about, you know, those kind of unicorn moments in history, the things that where you get those big opportunities, this is the one for mobile, right? When you can connect the dots for people with huge budgets and huge distribution who have no idea how to get into the app store other than building it themselves. And if you create a new path for that to happen, that's how money gets unlocked in markets.
Right. And you're not selling this for 99 cents a piece. All of a sudden you're going after the big fish. So
yeah, exactly.
Now, speaking of the monetization side, are you finding, like, in your portfolio, are you finding that most are just paid premium apps, or kind of they're free with ad supported, or how does that look for you?
So for us, it's mostly ads because we built a lot of games.
Okay.
And then the more you get into the problem solution side of the spectrum, it shifts over to in-app purchases from free apps or just paid apps in general. The rule of thumb there is, if it's more for entertainment, assume that you're going to make more on ads. If it's more for solving a problem, assume that you can make more on in-app purchases and paid purchases.
Okay. Is it just like there's a certain amount of this business that just is a portfolio business, and that's the nature of the beast, where it's, hey, it's an 80-20 and I got to make 80, or I got to make 100 to find the 20 that are going to be winners? Or because, you know, 1500 apps in 2 years, like, what is that, two a day?
Yeah.
Like, that's nuts.
Yeah.
Carter explained that the strategy of building a massive portfolio of apps was largely a response to opportunities that existed in the marketplace, where it was very easy to rank these apps in the App Store and very fast to break even on the investment required to create them. And then he indicated that that strategy has largely shifted in response to increased competition and longer break-even windows, where now they focus on building fewer but higher quality apps.
It's like a website now. You could probably go out and create 75 blogs, right? And maybe that would become a viable model for you. But realistically, in a marketplace like the internet, you might as well just start with one or two that really work well. And then maybe we'll build five more, knowing what we know and having a winning model that works. And we can apply it to different niches and all that sort of thing. But you wouldn't just go for the spread it wide first, you know?
Okay. All right, let's say I've got my source code for my paper football app. I found somebody to customize it for me, and it's now submitted and approved for the App Store. What's my next move?
So your next move is going to be, so as you submit it, what you're going to start to do what's called the keyword research for ASO. And so for anyone who doesn't know, in the App Store, you get 100 character spaces, you know, individual spaces to put in your keywords. It's not like a website where there's a lot of different, you know, links in and your title tag and, you know, the copy on the page and all that sort of thing. It's a matter of how you title your app, what keywords you put in there, and then how well the design kind of matches those keywords to the people searching. That's a big part of getting, like, you know, your first 1,000 downloads or whatever it may be, is you want to do some research on keywords, try to capitalize on some of the longer term keywords, get to the top of those searches that really match, you know, your paper football app. And then you launch it from there.
Okay.
And that's going to be your first step.
It's very like rudimentary SEO. Like, there's no off-page factors or like social signals or, you know, inbound links and domain authority, anything like that. It's just basically your listing on iTunes is like basically all you can control.
I would say it's going to evolve. I think it's always going to get more and more complex. But the big factors right now are, you know, your keywords and your title and all that, like the words you use, the reviews you get, and just the behavior of the app in the store. And so they call it download velocity and review velocity, which means how consistent are your downloads? You know, how consistent are your reviews? So if the algorithm sees that you're getting 22 reviews day one and then you're getting none the rest of the day, obviously you had a bunch of friends go in and put in a bunch of 5-star reviews, you know?
Okay.
And that's not necessarily going to help you beyond like credibility from people looking at it. And so there are definitely some nuances to it, but at the end of the day, it's way less complicated than the web algorithm. On Google Play, which is the Android App Store market, there was a little bit more of that gray science to it, but it's still nothing compared to the web.
Okay, as you'd expect, being Google.
Yeah, exactly.
What else has been an effective way to drive downloads?
So ASO is a great thing to do. I always recommend that, especially now for people who have a very specific app and who also don't have a budget, right? The next level beyond that is, I always recommend, you know, do some Facebook ads. Like, just get people into the app. Get traffic in there. And, you know, Facebook, their advertising network works very well with mobile, all the same targeting you can do for the web. And we call it cost per install, or CPI. That's kind of the way we gauge it. And it can be anywhere from 25 cents all the way up to $3 or whatever, depending. The biggest determinant on that is country, right? So if you just want some basic traffic, like, I just want to get some user data in there, you can go to a country in Asia or India, and you might get 3 or 4 cent installs, right? Like, really cheap.
Okay.
But, you know, no one's gonna, it's not gonna make you any money, but at least you'll get a couple hundred people using your app, and you say, all right, well, now I can look at the analytics, I can see what works and who's downloading it, things like that.
Are you then tracking on the back end what those users are worse. If you're paying a quarter for some, let's make it simpler. Like if you're paying a dollar for somebody to install the app, you know, on average through these ads, do you have data on the back end that says, okay, each user is worth $4 to the over the life of that customer, you know, through their ad clicking or ad viewing monetization?
The short answer is no.
Okay.
Now, in terms of lifetime value for creating ROI on an ad spend, it's very hard to do that with the current state of, because you're using so many ad networks, you're using a closed system in the app store, so there's the data doesn't come out seamlessly. What I always say to people is, look, just, you know, for 98% of people out there, just add up the amount of money you made in the last 30 days and divide it by the amount of people that downloaded it, and that's a pretty good indicator of what your lifetime value is going to be around.
Okay. Yeah, and that's really cool. Once you have that 30 days, you know, worth of data, then you can go to town, you know, on the ads and say, hey, I know how much customer is worth to me. As long as I'm not spending that much, I'll keep funneling people into the machine.
Going back to the game / entertainment versus problem solution, with problem solutions, buying traffic can actually be ROI from the get-go. If you have a great app that's very targeted, that's very, very well monetized, Facebook ads could be your holy grail. Now, you might not be able to make $1 million on it, but it could be very, very viable for you.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Wellington, my public coaching, one of my public coaching clients, built an app or had an app built in the travel hacking space, where if he ever gets the, you know, affiliate side of this figured out, where it's like I can get paid $100, $150 like per credit card sign up that gets referred to, like, oh, get 50,000 bonus points when you sign up for this credit card. Like that has probably a pretty high value per download, and so he might be able to do something cool on the advertising side.
Well, that's it, man. Like, you should have him go on my blog and type in search for a blog post called "The Mobile Backend You're Not Building." I think that's what it's called.
All right, we'll link all this stuff up in the show notes.
Yeah, and in that blog post, I basically talk about that exact thing. So all these people who build apps, especially on the problem solution side, so travel hacking as an example, they try to make all their money inside the app. But if you just collect the information, whether it be through Facebook or an email or whatever, and you can just link all that information into a marketing database like, you know, Parse or whatever free Amazon Web Services or whatever you want to do, and then you can just hook that into AOLweb or MailChimp or whatever. We've done this on multiple apps. On one of my really good friends, like business partners apps, we did this, and the lifetime value went up like 500% when we just started. All we did was just mail them affiliate offers on an email newsletter, like autoresponder series. It was like a 15-part series, because in the app, all we really did was just segmented people. So we would have an onboarding experience to say, what kind of user are you? So for travel hacking, like, you know, what countries do you want to go to, or what kind of travel hacking are you interested in, XYZ? Once they fill that out and you know what their interests are, you say, all right, you know, sign up for alerts or discounts or whatever, and they log in for Facebook, they put their email address in, that gets sent over to AWeber with a tag on it that says, this is this kind of a person, put them on this autoresponder series, and then just link up ClickBank offers or whatever products you have, and like it just kills it. It's like a whole thing of internet marketing and affiliate marketing that people just have no idea about, and it can make a huge amount of money.
Wow. Oh, man, I got tons of ideas coming out of this call. I love it. Cool stuff. Carter, thanks so much for joining me. Everybody, guys, it's check him out at Blue Cloud Solutions. We'll have links to all the resources that he mentioned in the show notes. And we'll wrap it up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
I would say if you want to get into apps, I would definitely focus on trying to find opportunities that don't require you to be in the app store as much, because I think if you want to have a really kind of big win or easy success, there's so much opportunity out there right now that will allow you to not have to compete with everybody else who might be 10 steps ahead of you. And if you just say, you know, doing the deals with the, you know, big brands as an example, those type of opportunities are everywhere in mobile right now. So if you're thinking about apps, don't always think about it the same way that everyone else does. Think about it and say, how can I get people into the app store who want to be in there in a really fun and exciting way that doesn't require me to have to go and learn how to code and do all the step-by-step stuff. By thinking that mindset, I think your audience, people out there listening to this, will be able to produce way more, you know, millionaire like success stories than people who are just like, all right, well, I'm going to try to code this or build a template from scratch and grow it organically, just like everybody else.
Yeah, I'm really glad you said that. Being the being the 1,000 app builder guy, but here it is. Here's the gold rush, and here's a way you can go sell shovels into it instead of being the miner.
Yeah, exactly. It's always about, 2 years ago was about the opportunity was to build a lot of apps, and now the opportunity is getting bigger people into the app store creatively.
Cool. Carter, thanks so much, man. We'll catch up with you soon.
You bet.
All right, you guys ready to go sell some apps?
It's a pretty innovative idea, at least for me, that you can use to take advantage of the amazing growth both in the app marketplaces and in smartphone usage in general. I really like Carter's call to take this upstream to some bigger companies and say, hey, let me help you guys get into the app market rather than trying to be that needle in the haystack app yourself that gets discovered and goes viral and makes $1 million. So if you missed anything during the episode or want to revisit a certain segment, fear not, because all the notes and highlights are available to you in a free downloadable PDF at sidehustlenation.com/131. And also, if you haven't checked out the cool new Jabbercast podcast player app, I think you'll like it. I'm one of their launch partners for their U.S. launch. It's a really slick interface plus enhanced content for the Side Hustle Show, like images and built-in Twitter integration, so you interact directly with me and some of the guests, as well as enhanced content for some of your other favorite podcasts. So if you check it out at shs.jabbercast.com, shs for Side Hustle Show, .jabbercast.com, you'll be able to download it today. So thanks so much for listening. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen, and I'll see you in the next edition of the Side Hustle Show. Hustle on.
Thanks for listening to the Side Hustle Show at www.sidehustlenation.com.